reading from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, chapter 7, text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Itam sa parivarasya matastasya stirojanai samandam vyaptya sanjato mahopata chayakshanat. Sri Parikshit said, "Dear mother, as the sound of Krishna lamenting with his family members filled the universe, a series of terrible omens quickly ensued." Commentary. In the seventh chapter, Brahma relieves Krishna of his bewilderment, and Krishna delights Narada by describing the supreme position of the gopis. As the yadus were running towards Krishna's palace, bad omens appeared in the sky, such as meteors and lightning without rain. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksurimalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sayagya Yogvasti Risham Tiyatnai Apaya Mamana Bipsamandam Kripam Viriya Paraduka Duki Sanatanistam Prabhamastriyami Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vairvicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivastave Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Govardhan. Some of you may have been at my place. Relatively quiet and good for this month of Kartik, the month of Srimati Radharani, where there's a sale on bhakti in this month in Vrindavan, Govardhan, which is why traditionally in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but the Vaishnavas, but the sannyasis, they would travel around vigorously, generally in India, the 4 months of the rainy season called Chaturmasya, because the nature of the rainy season is, it's a rural economy, most people can't do anything. They can't travel and so many things, and you don't work the fields because it's just raining. And the monsoon comes. It's just, I don't know what it is about India, but when it rains straight for months and months. People increase their spiritual practices. Even I know in America, the Raval family, we had my festival there every year. Most of the family for the whole 4 months only eats once a day. But for the monks that are traveling and vigorously, then at least for the month of Kartik, they come to a holy place and they perform Nitya Seva. Nitya Seva means if you really regulate your life, you do spiritual activities at the same time every day, you chant different prayers, take vows of, mantra meditation, etc. And Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays that days of Lord Hari, like Ekadasi and Janmashtami, Bhakti Janani, they give birth to devotion. This is a mother gives birth to a child. These months and special days, when they're observed, they actually bring forth a bhakti. It's very, very nice because really the holy place, what could I do? Why do we come to holy places? We come to holy places not that we feel qualified, but because we know there are qualified people here that can access the depths and glories of those places and share it with us. So just this little place that I'm staying next door is Burijan Prabhu, and then next door in the ashram there, Vaisheshika Prabhu, Jayadvaita, different people. And we congregate daily for Hari Katha, especially I go before lunch between 1 and 2. There's another section in the evening, actually happening right now. I usually go that for an hour, where we chant in here. So it's a very wonderful month. And I'm just thinking what Vrindavan means. So many people doing kirtan, chanting. You see, even early in the morning, these people with such dedication walking around Govardhan Hill. I mean, I see one sadhu that goes around twice. And when I saw him the other day, I mean, his body is completely falling apart. But I see this old sadhu just walking around with determination in that mood. And what is the parikram of Govardhan? Very, very powerful. But what is it? Again, it's spiritual consciousness. When you go around something sacred, it's a constant reminder that you're on the periphery and not in the center. That's why it's recommended that, especially householders, that they worship the deity. What does the deity worship mean? It means the shift in consciousness. So you put God in the center. Material consciousness means ego and personal desire is everything, and it projects on one, it projects on the world as Maya, the illusion. What's the illusion? That it's not God, that it's mine, it's meant for my pleasure. So this shifting, it can't be rapid. You can't break the illusion all of a sudden, but gradually moving out of the center and becoming a servant and putting oneself in the perspective to experience devotion and love coming through one's heart. Anyway, it's a very, very, very powerful place. A nice thing was said in the Sangha today, I'll share with you, and then we'll go on to the story. Very nice. It says, criticism's okay when meant to elevate, not to put down. Most of our criticism comes from a egotistic position in the heart to lord over people and get some pleasure when others are less than us. But sometimes a teacher can criticize with the mode to elevate. But that's actually rare if we actually search our heart. One other thing I just share with you is a little experience I had, because this is the time where I concentrate on Nam Bhajan. And what I find now is, and I had this experience, that it's kind of like a light on your heart. And it kind of focuses in on your heart, and when you're concentrated, you begin to see yourself. It kind of prevents, it puts up a mirror to your actual consciousness. And because, you know, chanting is a prayer to get deeper and deeper in spiritual life, and if you intensify that prayer to get deeper and deeper in spiritual life, what will become revealed are the obstacles to going deeper. If one doesn't actually meditate and concentrate, he never gets to that platform. But when one actually concentrates his mind, then inevitably in any spiritual practice, if you're meditating deeply, it will come to the point of revealing what's preventing you from going further. So actually, I was chanting and I was seeing, and it was so clear to me, what are the attachments in my heart that have to be relinquished, which are the ones that are appropriate at this time in my spiritual evolution to do so. And it was becoming apparent. And I saw kind of a phenomenon that I experienced before, but I actually came to the point, and I thought, like, okay, now if I want to go further, this is what I have to give up. This is what is anartha. Artha means value. Anartha means what has no value to my objective. But it's not based on just renunciation. It's based on the experience and goal of Krishna consciousness. That's the inspiration for going further. If I wanted to go further, here was the obstacle. And then I saw a very interesting phenomenon that happened. That I said, yes, I'm ready. There's no excuse. And I felt, yes, this will enable me to go deeper in my life. I'm sure there's so many more attachments, probably ones that are not appropriate to give up yet. But this is the next one. This is the next step. You know, this is the obstacle between where I am now and the distance between the step you're at now in your spiritual life and the next step you have to take is called an obstacle. And I saw what that obstacle is, what that attachment was to take that step. So I'm saying, yeah, I'm ready. I have to do it because I want to go deeper into my non-bhajan, my spiritual practices. I want to advance more in spiritual life. So this is what, and I saw an interesting thing that very, very same day, and it's very, very rare to me, I got sick. I mean, it's very, very rare for me. And I got sick. And naturally, just right after lunch, I just, okay, you know, something, I ate something wrong. I could see I tried to go to the evening sangha, but I had to leave early. And, you know, basically, I could just basically lay in my bed and suffer. But what I saw is exactly what happens is when we're in distress, we take shelter. And a lot of times we take shelter of our attachments. So I saw this was the test in the suffering, when, you know. You know, I wanted to take shelter of the attachment. The suffering, I wanted to take shelter of the attachment. That was the test. There's a thing in Sanskrit called shraddha or faith. And what is faith? Faith is where what you find dear. That's your faith. What you find dear. When you're in distress, what do you find dear? What do you feel actually relieves the heart? Unfortunately, without proper education, without hearing in the right way, people's faith is misplaced in things that will never bring them happiness. Look at people when they get money. They can buy whatever they want. But money can't buy happiness. And do they? And what is their faith? Now they have the money. Where is their faith? And you see people have faith in so many things that actually is not actually satisfying them at heart. So it's nice here to spend some time. It's nice to spend some time exclusively for God. One of the purports we were reading in the Bhagavatam is a very nice story when in the Mahabharata, when Vidura, the uncle of Duryodhana, the evil-minded king who was torturing the Pandavas, his uncle was such his well-wisher, and when he threw him out of the house and insulted him, and the Vidura went on pilgrimage for 36 years, The Buddha in his mind was thinking, what is pilgrimage? What is pilgrimage? And he was thinking, Chare Vritani Hari Toshanani. It means I'll take a vow for the pleasure of Krishna. So it's so nice to have parts of our day, a regulated life, that are exclusive for God, for the pleasure of God. That's called sadhana. And days of the month, ekadasi, and days of the year, pilgrimage, retreat, but retreat exclusively for Krishna. In this month of Kartik, in the Vaishnav culture, was traditionally a month for the pleasure of Krishna, where you change the perspective of your activities. Okay, now we'll get on to this story of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and it's such an incredible story of Narada's journey, his search through the universe to find the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. And that means one who has the most love, one whose heart is filled with the most intense and intimate devotion. And as we follow Narada's search, we get introduced through his eyes and through the behavior of these devotees to great souls. And it's basically what the Bhagavatam is. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a summary of the Bhagavatam, the message kind of put in another way. But what is the Bhagavatam? It's the stories of those who love God, and it's the stories of the qualities of God that of Krishna that are worthy of that love. Actually, in the Sangha, when we meet, someone quoted Voltaire, and it was a wonderful quote that illustrated this kind of spiritual process, why it's so important to hear the Bhagavatam and stories based on the Bhagavatam that exemplify pure love. Very wonderful quote by Voltaire said, appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well. It's such a wonderful quality to appreciate, even in our lives. Instead of being envious, to actually appreciate those who have excellence. And really, the topmost excellence is the excellence in heart. And just that appreciation brings what they have to us. And this is why in real, proper culture, the person who used to be the president of the ashram here, he used to tell me what it was like growing up in a traditional village in India. And what was the evening? The evening was the entertainment. What was the entertainment? There was Katha, there was Mahabharata, there was Ramayana, there was Bhagavatam, and they would have speakers in the village. And practically from one, house or hut in the village, you can hear all over the village the katha. And what would people hear? They'd be hearing the stories of great souls. And it would culture them in such a wonderful way. And the opposite way, Satchinandana Swami, I remember he gave a nice example of that. In modern day, you go into a teenager's room, and what do they have? They have some sports stars or they have some movie stars. And what happens by that type of meditation? The degradation that is in other people then belongs to us. Either their bravado or their luck, etc. So it's so nice to hear these stories. And in this wonderful story, we've come to the point where Uddhava, he's getting close. He's eventually now, it's going to be close. This is why this story, this chapter is Purna. It's the complete perfection. Because Narada Krishna is going to delight Narada. Finally, Krishna himself is going to demonstrate and explain the supreme position of the gopis from his own heart, how much he himself loves the gopis. And it'll highlight the excellence of the gopis' devotion and love. But what happens is, as we know, he's searching so enthusiastically, and he's pointed to Uddhava, and Uddhava is a great devotee. He's never egotistical. He's never in the center. So a devotee, it's hard for him to accept praise because he's so much in the position of the praiser. He's so much in the position of the servant that when he's glorified, the devotee, it's antithetical to his mood of humility, which allows him to experience love and love in the form of God's mercy. He's so much experiencing that. It's so treasured in his heart that praise, which can foster ego and prevent oneself from being a proper receptacle. I always give the example of a spoiled child. No matter how much love the parents give, no matter how many things the parents give, the spoiled child cannot experience that love because he has a sense of entitlement. So when praise comes that can give someone a sense of entitlement, the devotee who is experiencing love from the platform of humility so deeply, he shuns that, and he has a good reason too, because he was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan with a message to pacify the gopis. And when he came and he saw the height of their love, that they were so madly in love with Krishna, that even when Krishna was not there, they were seeing Krishna. And he saw, and also in their mood of separation, was so deep. So he was basically, any sense that there was a great devotee. So from that, the discussion became the feelings of the residents of Vrindavan in the separation of Krishna. And Krishna is hearing this, and he has so much devotion for the residents of Vrindavan. We've already had a complete class why Krishna did not go back, despite his love for the residents of Vrindavan, or how he was always there in their devotion and mood of separation. But so what happens here, and right now, where Krishna is in a catatonic state, he's so distressed and in so much separation that he actually collapsed. And because in this discussion, Krishna is hearing so much from everyone. He's hearing from Rohini, Balaram's mother. He's hearing from Uddhava. He's hearing from Balaram, who also went back to Vrindavan, the intense pain and separation that the residents of Vrindavan are feeling, the length of their separation. Krishna was away for 96 years, and it's not that their separation waned at all. It was increasing. So Rohini was glorifying Vrindavan and glorifying the cows. And Padmavati says, no. The cows were being sent out to the forest. Anyway, Krishna here, and she says, no, the cows are starving. And going through the forest of Vrindavan, of course, they're also in separation and going to. So she's just the antagonist. And Balaram says, why just the cows? Krishna is hearing this, and he's scorching in anxiety. He dreads when he hears the condition of the residents of Vrindavan. And he looks at Balaram, he just looks at Balaram. Balaram is just crying. And he practically, he's losing his composure, and he just managed to speak, and he says, why only the cows? All the animals, all the trees, everything that is dedicated to you is wasting away. And if you don't show your kindness, then the Lord of Death will. And it's so miserable in Vrindavan that the residents of Vrindavan are in anxiety that he killed the Kaliya serpent because he was poisoning that lake and it would be a suitable place for them to die. They're lamenting that Govardhan Hill is shrunk in separation. It would be a place to jump. And the Jamuna is drying up in separation. There's no water to drown. I got a very, very interesting comment. Some of you know Vrajya Kishore. He said one of the verses that you spoke, he said, is an Iendra verse. And I said, which one? And he read this one to me. He said, the devotees who relish the nectar of your names cannot die of starvation. Instead, their end will come in a fire, in a great forest. So in a very nice eulogy, he was saying, actually, he felt that if there was an inner story, Kayendra's passing away, that perhaps that was the devotees who relish the nectar cannot die of starvation. You know, because they would starve themselves to death, but they can't starve themselves to death because they're getting amrita. In Sanskrit, amrita means nectar. It's the elixir of immortality, nectar. But amrita also means amrita without death. So they relish the nectar. It means if they have nectar, they can never die. But what they die in is the fire of starvation. And Krishna's listening to this, and he's so gentle by nature and so tormented by the suffering of others, he grasps Balaram from the neck, and the Ganga of tears come from his eyes like a person whose life is in ruin, and he cries with loud sobs, but it's because it's Krishna crying, it's still a beautiful voice. And Krishna has, and gopis have different decorations. And those decorations are composed of love, because the decorations are to please their beloved. So as Radharani, Srimati Radharani is Mahabhav Sarupini. She's the manifestation of to please Krishna. That's the composition of Radharani. She has the full capacity to serve and please Krishna, then even her jewels are non-different than her because she wears them to please Krishna. And at the same time, Krishna, in a reciprocal way, his beauty is also a manifestation of his love and devotion for the devotees. Bharti Dham, Netavarava Pru, Karniyo, Karni Karyam. In the front here, there's a tree with these yellow tulips that Krishna wears in his ears, Karni Karni of Vibhrad Vishad, and the silken garments, Bharti Dham, and the peacock feathers, Vajanta, the garland that he's wearing to please the devotees. But they also have, that's called Alankar, there's also Avaram. Avaram is the decorations on the body, little drawings, little decorations with musk and different things. So he's crying so much. And this is going to be a very, very significant point that's going to come out in the story here, because it's revealing See, Lord Brahma is going to come because Krishna is in a catatonic state. Krishna is Advayam Gyan. He's consciousness, which is inclusive of everything. So if the absolute reality is depressed, there's existential catastrophe. So Lord Brahma is actually going to come. And he's a devotee of God. And he even saw in the Brahma-Vimohan Leela, when he stole the cowherd boys and calves, when Krishna was picnicking by the white sands of the Jamuna. I went to that place, the Brahma-Vimohan Leela, incredible place, where Krishna's having the picnic. And then, so Brahma, at that time, he was astonished to see Krishna's loving relationship with his devotees. He was astonished to see his loving relationship with his devotees. But when he saw Krishna in that condition, it so much deepened his understanding of what the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. Because these tears are the love for his devotees. So the heart of Krishna and the beauty of Krishna is manifest even more. He never saw it. And this is what's actually going to happen in this chapter. Because in the separation from the residence of Vrindavan, And we'll come up to that point where to revive Krishna, Lord Brahma, the only thing you can do is take him to another Vrindavan, new Vrindavan, which is outside the Dwarka, where Krishna is a king, where the architect of the demigods, Vishvakarma, built a duplicate Vrindavan, like a Madame Tussauds, is that how you pronounce it, wax museum, down to all the details. And when Krishna, to bring him out of that catatonic state, they bring him to this place and take away his crown and his military uniform and put a flute in his hand. Butch Kishore also asked the question, does Krishna have the flute outside of Vrindavan? No, this is they had to give him the flute. And he asked me to explain that. I said, just like President Clinton, the saxophone was not in the White House because he was too formal, and he had to be too formal and distant to the president. But when he went to Harlem, he played the saxophone. So when Krishna is God, he does not play his jazz. He does not play his flute. It's too revelatory of his heart. It's not appropriate in the role of God for those who worship him as the subordinates. They took out the flute, and then Krishna saw the statues of Mother Yasoda and the gopis, and he thinks of them. And then what happens is the intimacy of his heart and that relationship of intimate love manifests in such a way that when the queens of Dwarka see this, because they're hiding behind the trees, because Krishna will never think it's Vrindavan if the queens of Dwarka are there. They're hiding behind the trees. So when they see Krishna and they see the heart of Krishna manifest to the gopis, they feel like they've never seen him before because the full beauty manifests in love. I always make that point. That you cannot see a person unless you have relationship with that person. And the deeper the relationship, the more you see the person. There's so many people that we saw, but we misjudged because we didn't know them. Or we saw one thing, and when we knew them, we saw another thing. But if it's a loving, beautiful person and we develop intimacy and relationship, then more and more we see their beauty in heart. And I always remember that beautiful picture of Prabhupada. There's pictures of Prabhupada as the guru, the head of the corporation of ISKCON, the acharya, and it's very beautiful to see his majesty. But in the early days of ISKCON, when it yet was not a church yet, it was a sect. I was listening to a lecture where this philosophy, this professor of religion, was describing Max Weber, famous German sociologist, is describing the difference between a sect and a church. And it says all religions begin as a sect. Basically, there's a charismatic leader, and people spontaneously follow them. And then at a particular time, either the leader himself or after him, to preserve the values, they start to make a corporation, which has its benefits, but also some of the spontaneity is lost. And the person was talking that the way that the church, so then what happens is, when the spontaneity is lost, if the church doesn't, institutions tend to crush charisma. So when the church crushes charisma, then what happens is that people in the church that have individual inspiration that cannot be incorporated within the institution, then they form other sects. And that's what Protestantism was. You know, people say it's too institutional, it's losing the original meaning of or whatever, you know, and then the sect then becomes the church. What the church did to maintain the charisma is they developed orders so that very powerful charismatic people like St. Francis or Loyola, who started the Jesuits and, you know, the different orders. They were able to maintain their power for so long by rather than having charismatic people start other sects and churches, they incorporated them within the church by giving them orders that gave them the independence to develop their charisma. So it's kind of the early days, that picture where Prabhupada is leaving from San Francisco and the devotees are there and one of his lady disciples, Janaki, grabs Prabhupada's passport and ticket and steals it. Grabs it from his hand and says, we will not let you go. We love you too much. And then Prabhupada's smile is just ecstatic and radiant. So I'm giving just an example, but there's some type of beauty that comes out in intimacy. And that's what Krishna means. And that's what Braja Bhakti means. That's what the mood of Vrindavan is. Vaisheshika Prabhu, he wonderful devotee. Any of you have met him, he's pure devotee. He's just excellent in every internal, external aspect of his life. It's just a pleasure to get his association. So he was visiting Montreal, and he wanted to visit this church that Prabhupada visited. So he visited this church that Prabhupada visited, and it's Notre Dame in Montreal, and it was just so grand. You know, and when he went in there, he was reading the part of the conversation where Prabhupada was in the church, but he had so similar feelings. It was so majestic. It was so grand. And he immediately felt the reverence for God. A little distance, a little reverence. And it's a wonderful feeling. When I'm in Washington, D.C., if Henry is listening, he'll knows this. He lives near the National Cathedral. It's one of the most beautiful churches in the world. It's on 23 acres in the middle of Washington. Even to get there, you walk through these beautiful forests. It's amazing. Right from his house, it just takes me 5 minutes. I circumambulate every day. I just feel happy to put the church, God in the center, the Spirit of God. I'm a theist. Where the Spirit of God is, I appreciate it. You know, and we philosophy, you know, we should respect. The Spirit of God comes in many ways, and God appears to other people, and if you don't respect it, you're not respecting God. Your letter, you cut. Anyway, so, but at the same sense, he said, it's not Vrindavan. It's not Vrindavan. That's why Vrindavan, the descriptions are beautiful. They're so rural and pristine. And, you know, it's intimacy. It's Madhurya. It's sweetness. That's Vrindavan. It's kind of unique. I mean, when I'm here, I feel that. I mean, it's really a sweetness. You know, when we have our class at noon, this incredible Bridge Bhakti comes in all the time. He's so simple. I mean, and he sits there. He doesn't understand a word of English, but his eyes are sparkling. He's actually a professional eater. He walks around Govardhan Hill, and he's a Brahmin, and they feed him. And the athlete's skinny, but you know what they can eat is amazing. But another thing, his eyes are sparkling, and he knows everyone's heart. It's amazing. He knows everyone's heart. It's very simple. It's very sweet. It's Vrindavan. It's Vrindavan. You know, the cook at the Sanskrit school, he died. So, and he was, somehow he was a young man, and he lived in Radhakund, in a pious, humble, poor family. So, the school, maybe, you know, 20 of the Sanskrit students in Gopi Pranadana went down there for the funeral. And the father and mother, because he had two little kids, you know, leaves his wife, and they were devastated, but at the mood, when they saw them, the father just paid his obeisances. He was so grateful they came and touched everyone's feet. The mother was hugging everyone. Anyway, getting back to the story, this sobbing Krishna, this sobbing Krishna, with this intimacy of love for his devotees as his heart is coming out, it's extraordinarily beautiful conception of the divine. Dear Mother, he and Balaram then rolled on the ground and for a moment lost consciousness. Seeing the two lords crying in this unprecedented, lamentable state, all the residents of the inner palace lost control, and everyone's crying, and everyone comes. And they're all overwhelmed, the whole city. Now, how's that for an introduction? I have 15 more minutes to discuss what we're discussing today. But because it's like a week every time, somehow, and it's nice to repeat these things, so today, Richard says, Mother, as the sound of Krishna lamenting with his family members filled the universe, a series of terrible omens quickly ensued, because this is the Dham. And the holy place, everything is moving for the pleasure of Krishna. It's kind of moving towards the center with love. And it's this energy. And if you're moving with this energy, it's like having wind at your back. And if you move the other way in the Dham, if you come here for egotistical purposes and start to exhibit egotism, then it's like the wind is in your face. So the Dham is the wind of love and devotion, where even the wind is serving Krishna by just going over the water, to get droplets of water and the fresh fragrance. So when there's something happening to Krishna, then omens quickly ensue. It's like in Krishna book, when Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, Nanda Maharaj, because Krishna goes out every day to take care of the cows, Nanda Maharaj is in the village, and then he sees his left eye is shaking, the ground is trembling, meteors are coming. It's actually a science. I believe in this science. I tell people my left eye, when it starts to shake, I'm just waiting. I know. What's going? Something to bring you closer to Krishna. So when the yadus, everyone's running towards Krishna's palace because they're hearing this sobbing. And then meteors are falling, lightning without rain, because four-headed Brahma could find no one else to explain the cause of these omens. In Brahma, there's innumerable universes, and each universe has a Brahma. And Brahma is called secondary creative. From the perspective of people in the universe, he's the supreme, because we're like ants crawling on an elephant. We can't think of anything bigger. But he's just the creator of the universe. We read today that even Sheshanaga, the celestial serpent in which the universe is also Jiva. It's a post. So Brahma is like a post. Sometimes Krishna takes the post. Sometimes empowered living entities take the post. But he's responsible. So he comes to see himself, and he's accompanied by the Vedas and the Puranas, his personal attendants. And he's a learned person. Person who is in charge of anything has to be learned. He has to have vision. The most important thing in leadership is vision. A leader sees where you're going and sees how to get there. If you don't have that, it doesn't matter what else you have. Whatever you're doing is not going to be successful. Whatever you're doing, there has to be a vision. Or you have to follow people who do. Some people have vision and some people don't have vision. So Brahma, he's very, very learned, and he's surrounded with the most learned people. Because he has to rule, and he has to have vision. Brahma found his own father and spiritual master, because if we know the history of the Bhagavatam itself, Narayan is the creator. It's one divine God. But he reveals and manifests in various ways. Various functions. So Narayan means when God is the creator. And Prabhupada gives this simple example as this loving, intimate father, husband, son, who so much beauty is coming out in that relationship. That same person is the high court judge. When none of that is revealed, it's the same person, but in different functions. And according to the function you play, you access different parts of your personality. And according to the part you manifest for a particular relationship, that's what the person sees. The child who is with the father never sees the distant, powerful judge. The judge may be a very heavy judge, but the son never sees him like that, nor can even recognize him like that, the young child. Because the child may be riding on the father's back. Prabhupada gives a very good example to illustrate this when the Prime Minister of France had a meeting, the Foreign Minister of France, or the ambassador, had a meeting with the Prime Minister of England, Prime Minister Gladstone. And he was 1 hour waiting above the appointed time where he came into the office to meet the Prime Minister. He was so upset. And where was the Prime Minister? He was crawling on all four legs with his grandson riding him on his back. So according to relationship, you see different. The Foreign Minister was meeting someone high, and the Prime Minister was subordinate to the intimate love of his cute grandson, who he let him ride on his back. So Brahma is like that. He's in a subordinate position, and he found his own father and spiritual master, the original Narayan, in an unprecedented state. Because we know when Lord Brahma, in the stories of creation, he's born from the navel of Vishnu or Narayan, and he's kind of lost and he doesn't know what to do. And then he prays, and he hears the voice, Tapa, that you should perform divine austerities. And then he realizes, so he then becomes instructed, basically by Krishna, in knowledge. So Krishna is his father, Krishna is his guru. So he's only seen him in that perspective. He hasn't seen the more intimate aspects. So now, when Brahma comes to see what's wrong, he sees him in an unprecedented state, distressed by love for his devotees. Seeing the Lord thus bodily, boldly revealing his true greatness, normally hidden, Brahma was astonished. For a moment, he too lost his gravity and began to cry. So Brahma is learned. People who are learned, they act from buddhi or intelligence. They're not impulsive. Tears don't come to their eyes. They don't lose their composure. Or at least they don't allow themselves to be in an emotional state. Sometimes we see when someone dies or something, or even someone retires and they give a speech, and they're usually some famous athlete or politician, and they begin to cry and they say, oh my God, this is embarrassing. I'm never like this. That part of them they don't reveal because they're usually the coach or they're the president or somebody. So now he's seeing someone who he held in awe and reverence, revealing, as it says here, it's beautiful. He says revealing. He's chatmatkaram. He's astonished in his love. And what is he seeing? He cried. Adurai, he cried. Vrasta, he had lost Darya. He had lost his sobriety. He lost, why? Because Pitaram, the father, Guru, Maha Narayan, the original Narayan, is Udhatam, he's boldly, prakata, revealing Mahatma Bhav, the greatness of his own heart for Preshta, Prani, out of love for his devotees. He's revealing boldly his true greatness, which is Nigubha. It's normally hidden. And that's true. If you think of some very powerful person, his true glories, which is his loving personality and intimate relationship, is hidden from most people because he's the ruler. So the purport is very beautiful, and I want you to listen carefully. It says Brahma is not just the main engineer of the universal creation, but also an infinite loving service of his servant of the Supreme Lord. And that Supreme Lord himself is not just the ultimate origin of creation. That he's not just limited that way, but also the greatest loving servant of his devotees. Prabhupada said something very beautiful in one purport. He says that God does not have the defect of impersonality. Krishna's highest glories are not to be found in his pastime of creating the material world so that rebellious souls may indulge their perverted intentions. Earlier in Krishna's pastime, Brahma had visited Vrajabhumi and discovered Krishna's true glories in the ecstatic relationships between Krishna and his pure devotees. Now in Dwarka, Brahma is being granted further realization. He is learning Krishna's most wonderful qualities are his concern for his devotees and his submission to their control. Why is submission a great quality? That's what love is. If you love, then you are submitting yourself to another's desires. Submission is glory when it's out of true love. And the greatest people are the people who submit themselves to the desires. Of course, we're not talking codependence, and we can discuss the difference between that. Not a psychological aberration. And people, that's not true love. That's for oneself. When actually a true loving person, think of a person who you admire, someone with a loving heart, they are a servant of others. They think of others before themselves. You can't be impressed just a spiritual personality unless you see that he's a servant. And that's what a spiritual personality is. He's always in the mood of service. As a service, he may take students. As a service, he may even criticize to elevate, but he's always in the consciousness of service. I know a big friend of mine here, one Baba, he was looking for a guru, and he went to the greatest scholar in Vrindavan. The person had 8 PhDs from Banaras Hindu University in all the different darshans, greatest scholar. But when he came in, he saw him sweeping the floor of the temple room. You know, he saw him serving the other devotees. That's beautiful. So Brahma can, realizing this, Brahma can now more fully understand Krishna's identity as the original Supreme Lord Narayan. Brahma was not ignorant of these matters before, but seeing in such a helpless state his own progenitor, who had taught him the Vedas, shocked Brahma into a deeper realization. When Brahma saw Krishna in distress, he himself could not help but cry. With difficulty, Brahma brought himself under control and started thinking how to restore his Lord to normal. Soon an idea came into his heart, and then that idea that comes into his heart is we'll take Garuda, who's the carrier of Brahma, and he's so expert and so intelligent, he can carry Krishna without disturbing him. And the only way to revive Krishna, because he's sobbing and he's in this catatonic state in deep separation and love from the residents of Vrindavan, And the only way to revive him is to bring him to New Vrindavan. And it's really amazing. And they put him there, and then they wake up Balaram, and they tell him the plan, and then they wake Krishna up gradually. And then Krishna sees the statue of Mother Yasoda, and they put fresh mucket, fresh butter. And he gets up, Mata, Mata. And then Krishna looks at the sun and sees that it's near noon, and he feels embarrassed. Oh, my God, I overslept. I didn't take out the cows. And then he sees the statues of the gopis. And his full love and intimacy manifests from his heart. And anyway, it's an interesting story. And then finally he's revived, but Narada, who's there, he's coming to see the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy, through Krishna's heart, sees the revelation and love for the gopis. So good. I ended basically on time. Anybody like to ask a question? Who's that? Chinese Thai?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple questions, actually. And they both have to do... you're welcome. Thank you for a really nice class. They're both things that you said pretty early on. And the first one has to do... You're talking about your meditation and you sort of identifying attachments you had. And one comment you made was that there's certain attachments that... Yeah. Maybe it's not time to give up or not appropriate to give up. And so I was curious, you know, you're a sannyasi. We're all in the material world. Yeah. It seems to me like that right, what is the duty of a man about to die? It's the same as the duty of everyone in some sense. And so I'm just curious about, it seems like it's always appropriate to give up attachments. And that with the, you know, understanding yukta vairagya, using things appropriately. So that's my first question. If just you could clarify that.
Well, I'll just make, you know, clarify, you know, dharma is a science, right? Dharma is the appropriate thing to do. And it's based on one's condition, right? So, you know, obviously... Well, let's just say, I mean, let's say, you know, a particular example. You know, one is attached to managing, right? Right?
Right.
He likes to control, he likes to manage, but it's a very strong desire, right? You know, so what's done is it's dovetailed. Right? His duty is not to give it up, but his duty is to, you know, use it in a particular way. Right? Now, at a particular time, you know, maybe one is older, etc., right? He realizes that he's been sufficiently purified from this desire, and it's no longer serving him in his spiritual life, and actually he can give it up. I give you an example, just like making money, right?
Right.
You know, some people have an attachment to that, right? And they're business people, right? If they renounce it, they'll just think of it more. They're like Arjuna, if he was to go and give up the fighting and go to the forest, he would just be thinking more of it. So, you know, his dharma is to regulate it. But at a particular time, you know, maybe, you know, it's appropriate. Now's the time that, I, you know, this duty is renounced. So, you know, we always have that. And that's just duties. And then there's just things that are just subtle attachments that we have. You know, there's certain things that we should just out and outright give up. You know? So that's one thing, and they become exposed, that this is just something that, hey, you're just hanging on to it, right, and you don't need it, right? You know, you're still listening to all that hardcore music, you know, You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's just time to give it up, you know? You know?
Once in a while, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. you know, it's just time to give it up, you know? And, you know, an example here, there's one godbrother that's here, you know? And he's my, you know, he's about 60, and he's going to take sannyas, you know, a renounce, you know, with permission of his family. He has older children, et cetera. You know, he's ready, his wife's ready, you know, it's time. You know, 10 years before, that wasn't appropriate, right? So
right.
It's like that.
Great.
So there's two things. One are things we should just obviously just give up. So many trivialities and so many things and subtle things, et cetera. And then there are other things that depend on the person and his evolution. But yeah. Okay. And what's the second question?
The second one had to do with, and you've said this, you know, many times, you're talking about Narada's right step by step, going to the devotees who are more and more the recipients of more and more mercy, and
yeah.
What that means is that
yeah.
these are people who have love in their heart and the most devotion, and so my question is, it seems like the love and devotion is a result of the mercy and not a cause, because if I understand mercy correctly, it's undeserved kindness. So it's not that the people who have the most of it, right? Who is it that prays, right? I deserve the most mercy because I'm the most fallen. So is it the effect, or is it a cause, or is it kind of both and cyclical, or
what,
something
the love
else
that they have?
Right.
I mean, the love they have is, yeah. Well, you know, wow. It's kind of like which comes first, the chicken or the egg, you know?
Well, yeah, in some
because
sense,
you're
yeah.
Talking about you're talking about the eternal associates, but in an ordinary sense, you know?
Right, which is a more useful question, I think.
You know, I'm going to read something that I wrote today, which is going to kind of come out. I'll read it. It's about this effort and mercy and which comes. So this is what I wrote. Let's see if you can follow it. But I wrote this. It said, I try to hear the mantra, but my efforts fail. I add heart to my chant and beg for mercy. The mantra becomes clear beyond my own strength. With effort I chanted, by mercy I succeed. Mercy and works in chanting. Hearing the mantra is not simply the result of our effort, it is also the reciprocation of Krishna to our effort. Effort is needed, but only to make us realize that effort alone is not sufficient. We need Krishna's mercy and must beg for it. Relationship between effort and mercy. Without sincere, disciplined effort, how we give our heart to the name. Without giving our heart to the name, how we attract Krishna's mercy. There's a relationship. I'll tell you how I understood the relationship. I tell this story because it was such a stark realization. When Krishnamayi was leaving this world, and I went back in the middle of the summer to Vrindavan to help, and not help, but to provide at least some emotional support for Seva Priya, your wife.
Sure.
You know, I had some service to do for the president of Boston Temple to order some deities. So they say mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. So I went out in the sun. You know, I had to go to the bazaar. You know, they don't open till 10 o'clock. It was so hot. And I went to one shop, and they asked if I'd like a drink, and I wanted these mango drinks, you know. That may be one of the attachments I have to give up, you know. Just a glass of water. What do you mean, sugar water? You know, but I wanted this, like, mango drink. So they went around, they got me these two cold They're called fruities. And I was so desirous of them, and I got to take them. You know how the shops are, you know, they're up high. So this beggar boy, you know, I only see his, like, above his chest, comes to beg my drinks, you know. And I just went, like, come on, leave me alone. You know, the worst thing is when you're trying to enjoy is someone who lusts after what you're doing. It's like the evil eye. I said, leave me alone, you know. And, you know, kind of just made that face. And then he went. And then when he walked out of the store, I looked below his chest, and I saw how ragged he was and poor, you know.
Yeah.
So I went to go give him one of the drinks, and then he disappeared. I couldn't find him, right? And then I kind of felt like an ugly American, at least for the day. And what I realized is the drink, he didn't deserve it. He didn't pay for it, right? He couldn't earn it. But he attracted my mercy. How? By his need. So although mercy is undeserved, it's not that you can't do anything to attract it. You can't earn it,
right,
but you can attract it by showing yourself as an appropriate object of mercy. So now I should just say one other thing about, you know, again, it's highlighting the love of the gopis, but actually speaking, you know, it's all servitude and it's all pure. That's why these chapters are, is what is it? You know, the complete perfection, right? And then it has the most beloved. But the most beloved is the chapter before. The most beloved is already a superlative, but there's something beyond the superlative. So Prabhupada, and then there's the beloved. The Prabhupada is perfect, more perfect than most perfect. And the only way I can understand that is if you look at the, let's say, the love of a mother, and the love, and then there's a child has a romantic relationship, right? Now, if it's a perfect romantic relationship, there may be more intimacy. And the mother, at a reading in the Bhagavatam, the mother may even appreciate that, right? She may even appreciate that relationship, the romantic relationship. And she may even realize it's more intimate. But she'll never want to become the lover. And nor can we ever think for a moment that her love is not perfect and pure. So it's a very subtle distinction there. Does that help?
Yeah, no, wonderful, Maharaj. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you.
Maharaj? All right, well, I'm sorry. This is Mooney, Maharaj. I've missed class so much. It was really great to listen today.
Which Mooney, Maharaj?
No, this is just Mahamuni.
Oh, Mooney. Okay.
Class was great today, Maharaj. Thanks so much. I had a question, but I'm happy to get in line after Gail.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Maharaj, every
time... Gail has so many questions that she asks that...
I always have to stay in the back of the line.
I wanted to
ask
you. I mean, here we have this kind of remarkable discussion of Krishna going to this Nava Vrindavan, and something similar to what happens in the I don't know why my mind is slipping right now, but the play by Rupa Goswami before the. Anyway, I don't know why I just forgot it, but there's a play by Rupa Goswami where he also does something similar. And I when I'm hearing this, one thing I'm wondering is, like, is Sanatana Goswami giving us a description of some Nitya Leela that he's experiencing through his yogic perception? Or is this Sanatana Goswami who just knows Krishna so well, he can find a kind of story that appropriately expresses Krishna's love? What are we hearing exactly?
You know,
how do you understand it?
I, you know, I, can I tell you one thing is, you know, when something has already been answered in the text,
yeah,
I hesitate to speculate on it. So, you know, and also the editors, this book was written here. It's pretty mystical that Gopi Pranadana, he didn't have any place to stay, and the place he stayed is a godbrother of mine gave him a room in his ashram, and the room was at Chakleshwar Mahadev, where Sanatan Goswami did his bhajan. So he wrote, he translated this book, Gopi, at that very place by the transcendental arrangement. He's here. Jayadvaita Maharaj, the editor, is here. I'm going to ask them, but I do believe, you know, that it's some psychic perception. I mean, you know, there's some revelation or something of, you know, these... You know, I know that we project so much on what we hear, but we accept it as historical. You know, at least the personalities involved are eternal personalities. I guess you can't call it historical in the sense that, you know, it's not made up. Now, you know, and then there's the leeway that great souls have to repackage and shape messages, you know, and you know, what is the combination of both that's interplayed here, you know? In other words, there may be something that happened, and then it's got to be expressed in a way that the frame of reference of the audience, so it's like shaped a little bit differently. And I guess in a way, I'm saying I'm not yet going to go out on a limb and give a definitive answer, because I know there's something out there where this thing is definitively discussed, and I can just go research it tomorrow and then, you know, talk about it, you know?
Okay. All right,
and
thank you very much.
I'm fine with either one, you know.
As am I,
yeah. Okay.
All right,
okay.
Thank you, Mark. And thanks again. Yeah. It was wonderful to hear.
Yeah, Mooney, it's great, because I knew, Mooney, that you were settling down there, you know, in your new place there in...
Yeah.
What's the name of the university? Bridgewater, right?
Bridgewater State, yeah. Bridgewater State University.
Kind of settling down, new house, new job, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's good to hear you. It means you're kind of, like, settled in now, you know?
The last three weeks, Kula Pradeep was here, and then my parents were here, and then we went down to visit some people on the shore. So it's just been the kind of craziness is over, so we should get back to normal.
What's the shore called?
The shore? No,
like
I mean
Point
Jersey.
Pleasant?
Oh, well, when I
oh,
say the
Jersey,
shore, I mean New York, New Jersey area. New York, New Jersey, Philly.
Okay,
that's
the
what
shore.
I mean.
Yeah, you grew up on the shore. I got it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay.
Okay. Gail?
Thanks.
Gail?
Yeah.
Gail?
Should I wait
for next
week?
It's really getting late.
I know. I'll wait.
If you could, you're very
okay,
thankful.
Okay, no problem.
Hey, everyone, thanks for coming on. Bryn, it's great to hear that you're on. That's so nice that you're also joining us. Great. Nice Sunday. Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Dr. Carl.
Hey, Carl. Great, great. I got your letter.
Yes.
You know, you check out those things, you know.
Yes.
And then if there's any problem, get back to me.
Okay? Thank you very much.
And I'll write you about that. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, there's... And, you know, anyway, check out those things. I could, if it's only a couple of days, I could also ask... I think you should try the guest house first.
Mm-hmm.
Yukon Guest House is really good now. And
okay.
Then if you can't get that, then let me know. And, I you know, maybe I can try some things too. You know, maybe ask Bori John if his room is available for a couple of days. You know, he has a room that's not used sometimes at that time. Okay.
Okay. And when might
you
be deciding about your plans, Maharaj?
Within a couple of days. You know,
okay.
There's actually, now that I'm thinking of it, there's a person that's coming practically the same time as you.
Mm-hmm.
This young man from New York is coming. and to be with me, to travel with me for about a month. So he's coming for, he's coming at the same time, like it's 29.
Mm.
So I'm thinking more and more that I'll be there at least a week, and then there's some people from Russia coming. So
well, that would be incredible.
Send me a note in 2-3 days, and I'll let you know, okay? And then we can discuss.
Thank you so
okay,
very
thanks,
much.
Paul.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Chris in Pennsylvania. Really nice class today.
Chris, Chris, we'll see you soon too, right? That lady, Leela, that's going to help you. Did she write you?
No, not yet.
She'll write you soon. You know, she went to Tirupati with her family, and you know, I called her on the phone. She'll write you soon.
Okay.
You know.
Great. Thank you. Thank
okay.
you, Maharaj.
Anybody else like to say hello today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisance first.
Wow. Nanda Dulo, Haribo. When do we get the fortune of seeing you out here again in Mayapur, Vrindavan?
Bless me, Maharaj, so that I can see you.
Wow. I'm here with Jai Vaitamaj, so many nice souls. Yeah, I pray that you come and join us one Kartik here. You'd be relished by Sheshika Prabhu, Jai Advaita, Keshava Bharti. There's also another god brother named David Vyas. Incredible soul. He's been 40 years translating Prabhupada's books from the English to the German. So many people and the katas. 3-4 hours a day, I pray. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry, hi, Bo. Jai, remembering that National Cathedral walk, you know?
Nice,
wonderful.
Sir.
Thank you, Henry. Hi, Bo. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Thank you all. Vanchakalpa Sarubhya Shakati Sindhu Vedra Patitanam Bhavani Vyavasya